comments about the way in which he observes what I have analyzed from him is that he uses primary colors, such as blue or red. And in my experience, wearing those colors when I'm in my session really helps and triggers the memory of participants.
There could well be a link. I mean, the use of colours, in some way it's culture specific. For example, the colour white can mean different things in different cultures, but a lot of the time there are universal kind of human characteristics where we read a colour in the kind of same kind of or similar way, because we're all the human animal, we're the same species.
And the fact that William McQueen is using those primary colours makes you think that maybe those are the colours that remain in our brain that you get into.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Speculation.
Yeah.
And I support that by saying that, you know, when you design hair bones, when you're looking at you actually are looking at colours from primary colours that appear actually part of what happens often in dementia is that people have visual losses and spatial losses, and actually taking two colours from opposite sides of the colour is a colour wheel and very successful. So it won't work at that door. And doing something that's contrast is probably like that lovely
Yeah, I really wanted to talk about the colours in it, because he's using complementary colours again and again, the red and the green and the purple and the yellow and the blue as well. Absolutely, I mean, advertisers use it all the time. McDonald's has a big red and yellow, because apparently those colours stimulate appetite. So we should use colour as a real way of enhancing people's mood and to help them think, like the Mondrian, because it makes you think, because you're kind of following the colours and kind of trying to weigh up the relationships between spaces and colours, the way that you would in a dance, for example, trying to create a sense of balance or imbalance. Not create, but read those kinds of qualities. And that's the sort of qualities that you read even in sound, you know, the way you talk or the way you walk. So.
I was fascinated to see how embodied those images were. I mean, the element of the body is very much present in that. You mentioned both art therapy, and visual artists. Do you have a comment as to how they might approach the art making and facilitating that for a person with dementia?
Yes, this is what I wanted to. Didn't have quite enough time to deal with it. I'm not involved in art therapy at all. I'm just talking purely from what I might do if I was in that situation. Would be to encourage people to work very freely with a range of different materials. There was an example I was going to talk about where somebody was offered pencils and paper to draw with and paint, but all they wanted to do was to make their pencil go round and round so that they were enjoying that movement. So perhaps the thing to give them is a bit of clay that they can mould, or perhaps a wooden dowel that they can wind a string round. So if you give a variety of materials with different qualities, you know, one hopefully will trigger a response. You know, it could be a pair of scissors and cutting paper. The last slide was of three-dimensional cut-out shapes. Henri Matisse, you know, he wasn't suffering from dementia, but at the end of his life he was bedridden, and he created these fantastic collages from his bed by cutting sheets of paper and getting them stuck.
I have a question that relates to something you said very early on about the purpose of the work is the activity, not necessarily the outcome, people not being concerned. And I think one of the problems in this culture and in the arts culture is we have notions of quality, and that this work, which may operate from a very different aesthetic, isn't given value in the world of the arts. And I mean, that applies in terms of as much as it does in the visual arts. I wondered if you had some observation about how we might shift our perception about the quality issue. Because often people who do this work are put down by other parts of the art establishment because their work didn't seem to be of quality or of theatre quality or gallery quality. It happens to be different.
Well, there's a whole area called outsider art, where it's art created by people maybe who are in mental institutions or who are somehow finding some difficulties. But in terms of judging the quality of artwork, probably 90% of the art which we consider to be high quality, which is shown in all the galleries and museums, contemporary art, will be forgotten in about a century. Time is the thing that's held. Vermeer, in his time, was, you know, a lot of artists, he might have had a successful period, but he died in poverty, and yet nowadays, you know, they're priceless. So it's a very, very loaded issue, really.
But I think it is important. About valuing this work.
It is. But I think this work could be valued in its own right by perhaps having exhibitions of the work so that the people who create the work, their carers and other people involved could come and enjoy it and maybe have seminars or talks about it and see what worked best, what kind of activities worked best, so that you could, you know, enlarge on those sorts of activities. Nothing stops us enjoying whatever's created. You know, kids go to school, come back with whatever they've done, even if they're nursery school, immediately it goes on somebody's fridge. And they're enjoyed, you know, so it depends on what you mean.